Welcome to Philadelphia Focus. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have, from ARC Philadelphia, we have the Health Meet Coordinator and Health Advocate, Shane Janik, and from the Drexel College of Medicine, we have students Ashima Katakwar and Devin Barnaby. Welcome, all.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you so much.
Shane, would you like to get us started today? Tell us a little bit first, the mission statement and its relationship to Spark Services.
All right, so the ARC of Philadelphia is a chapter of the ARC of the U.S., if anybody's familiar. Essentially, we're one of the oldest advocacy agencies for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. ARC chapters are actually all unique in that we share the same branding, but we all may operate in different ways. So some advocacy services at one chapter are going to be different that you find at the next. What we do at the ARC of Philadelphia is we have a child advocacy department, an adult advocacy department, which essentially is anybody that has questions, anybody that has concerns that they may not be able to find the correct information that's out there, or just need some tips and advice on how to navigate some of the systems that involve the services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, they can reach out to us. Our services are actually all free, and it can look like anything from just a one-time phone call or an email all the way up to being brought on as a case, and we'll work with you side by side to really alleviate any of the issues that people may be facing in their lives.
Today, we're going to talk about Health Meet. You want to talk a little bit about, first of all, what the heck is it?
Okay, so Health Meet is the ARC of the U.S.'s term for really all things related to health advocacy. So as I mentioned, some chapters will operate differently. So everybody's Health Meet program is going to look differently as well. What we do at the ARC of Philadelphia is we partner with Drexel's College of Medicine to train medical students each week that visit our site with our sister organization, Spark Services, that you mentioned, who run an adult day program, is usually the common terminology you'll hear. So I actually go and recruit people with IDD in our adult day program that also want to volunteer to meet the students and do a free health checkup, a health assessment. So essentially the program is training medical students that otherwise wouldn't be exposed to the population with IDD, and getting people with IDD a preventive service that they may not be able to access on a regular basis.
Can we first real quick talk about who are your clients and what are some of the situations that they are facing?
Essentially, every one of those individuals that may have IDD. So there is a difference between people with IDD and people with physical disabilities. Those are two totally different worlds, but oftentimes they do overlap. So essentially, what most people or the public may be familiar with IDD is essentially what people just consider special needs, but the proper terminology would be IDD.
Does an intellectual or developmental disability affect a person's ability to access basic medical care?
Yeah, part of what I go over with the MD students are actually a lot of the social determinants of health. So we'll talk about that. People with IDD, if they do not have employment, they most likely have SSI or SSDI. And right now in the state of Pennsylvania, it's around $700 a month on average. And essentially, this population can live in poverty. So now on top of their disability, they're also living in poverty, which can exacerbate their access to health care and health conditions further. People with IDD may not be able to drive themselves, so now you're relying on transportation from other individuals, and you can see a transportation barrier in a variety of populations, and it's no different for people with IDD.
I was going to ask about insurance, and someone who, do they not qualify for Medicare right automatically?
If an individual with IDD doesn't have private insurance, if it's from a guardian or somebody in their family, most likely they'll have Medicaid, and if you've spoken to, again, other populations, other groups of people that primarily rely on Medicaid, there's going to be barriers with using Medicaid just in and of itself. Some providers can essentially deny you just for having Medicaid. No, I'm not going to see you today. And some specialists actually have more liberty to just say yes and no if they'll take you on in their offices. So specifically dentists actually have more freedom to just say yes and no depending on your initial call if they'll take you in for an appointment. So I've had families mention, yeah, I'll get a dentist on the phone. And they're like, all right, what time is your appointment? And I'll mention, oh, by the way, my son has autism. And they may be like, oh, well, we may not be too equipped for that or whatever it may be. So they face a lot of stigma and bias that comes with it as soon as you bring up some of those words with providers.
The assumption that because of the intellectual or developmental disability that you would be more closely monitored. And Shane, is this not the case?
Yeah, that would be the presumption that you would think that somebody with a disability would access healthcare more so because of their disability to stay on top of it, as you mentioned. And it's actually the opposite situation for a variety of those barriers I mentioned earlier. One that I left out is if somebody with IDD may not be able to provide self-care for themselves, they're relying on somebody else to do that. And when you look at, for example, brushing your teeth, if somebody has to brush their teeth hand over hand, that's great for a day and great for a week. But is it as effective as somebody that brushing your own teeth? And when you go look beyond the week and you look at somebody's entire life course, you can see how dental care, relying on somebody to brush their teeth hand over hand, is going to be less effective than somebody being able to do it themselves. So in addition to some of those other barriers, it is reliant on self-care from other people. It's the same in geriatric healthcare. Similar issues are there as well.
Are your clients more susceptible to chronic illnesses?
Yes, but we have a phrase that we like to use that just because somebody has a disability does not mean they have poor health. Somebody's disability can put them at a disadvantage for poor health outcomes. And so an example I like to use is every now and then you'll see people running the 5K that may have had a limb amputated, and that person can be very, very healthy. They have way better cardio than myself sitting here today. So just because they have a disability does not mean that they have poor health. But again, a lot of times what we see in the population with IDD is that their disability puts them at a disadvantage of poor health. And that also brings in the healthcare system that we'll get into. But so not only are they at a disadvantage, maybe if they have limited mobility, limited cognitive functioning to make the decisions about their dietary choices and things like that, but also their interaction with healthcare providers may also put them at a disadvantage.
When you're dealing with a population that's already compromised as far as income and accessibility to healthcare, you're looking at diet issues, and that means that things like heart disease, diabetes, those are the kind of chronic diseases that I was thinking of. And does it adversely affect this population more than the rest of us?
Yeah, so people with IDD are actually 2 to 3 times the risk of being overweight or obese in their lifetime. They have a greater risk of having a tooth extracted before the age of 30 than somebody without the disability. And those chronic conditions, you do see a health inequity amongst the population, and people without IDD. You can find that in dental care, podiatric care, ophthalmology. And again, it's not necessarily because of an individual's disability. It's just a matter of the type of care they receive and the access to care. There's actually a disparity in preventive services. So people with IDD are not recommended at the same rates to have a pap smear or a colonoscopy or a mammogram. And those reasons are unknown. Really, the bottom line may just be a personal bias by healthcare providers to not recommend those things for whichever reason. The same actually applies to lifestyle questions. So when we all go to the doctor, we hear them ask, do you smoke? Do you drink? Are you sexually active? Those three questions get overlooked a lot with people with IDD. And again, we don't necessarily know why. It may just be it's presumed that people with IDD don't smoke or drink or are sexually active. And I can assure you that the population does engage in these behaviors just as much as anybody else.
What is Health Meet? And what is the Health Outreach Project? Because that is, of course, where the ladies are actually getting, as students, their experience with your clientele.
So Health Meet is actually a program started by the ARC of the United States in collaboration with the CDC, actually, in, I believe, 2011 or 2012.
Oh, so this is a fairly recent development.
Yeah, from what you'll find on our website, it was essentially just that the CDC had recognized that there wasn't a lot of data on the population with IDD and their health outcomes. So they partnered with the ARC to set up these trainings for providers and to provide health assessments for people with IDD across the country. They actually partnered with, I believe, 6 states and over 20 sites, and we happen to be one of them that joined in the third cohort in 2015. So we did that with Drexel's College of Medicine, and that program between the ARC of the U.S. and the CDC has since ended, but our volunteer site with Drexel has continued because the program was benefiting their students so much. So since 2015, when the initial pilot program ended, we have just continued that with Drexel up till today.
And so this started off trying to find clinical research data, and it's turned into an actual one-on-one service provider.
Yeah, and again, going back to some chapters may do it differently. So we partner with med schools to train students. Another chapter may partner with healthcare professionals. They may be, you know, people that they may train nurses and physicians themselves, because because current healthcare providers will also report that they don't feel confident to provide care for the population, or that if they were to provide care, it may not be as adequate as with somebody else. And those attitudes kind of just stem from maybe personal opinion or biases that, you know, permeate all of our attitudes. But so, you know, in addition to training students, current providers also report the same feelings.
So the Health Outreach Project, when does that operate? Where does that operate? And who the heck is operating it?
So the Health Outreach Project is the clinic that we have at the ARC is part of a bigger HOP umbrella that is part of the Drexel University College of Medicine. Essentially, it's a network of 5 clinics throughout Philadelphia, as well as a lot of smaller projects throughout our community. That are run by students. And the goal is basically to reach out to vulnerable populations or populations that don't necessarily have the healthcare that they need. And it's really beneficial kind of on both sides, because people like for our clinic, the IDD population, other clinics work with different shelters in the city or the homeless population, they receive healthcare. And on top of that, we as students get a lot of exposure to patient populations and get to just interact with our community.
So this is part of an overall outreach project. So you're really treating the intellectual developmental disability more or less as the other clinics or the total project is treating language barriers and income and housing barriers to health.
Yes, exactly. HOP is main goal is to provide health opportunities for us and also for individuals, for people who have some barriers to healthcare, whether it be, like as you said, like shelter or transportation or cost or language, any of those things. Really, both sides are benefiting, as Ashima was saying. But for us at the ARC, we come once a week, 4 times a month, and we run a clinic at the ARC, and we basically do just a basic screening, so blood pressure, like lung and heart sounds, vision screenings, height and weight, just a basic screening. And so for us, it helps with the communication, because it is the physical we learn in medical school. So we're kind of comfortable on that end, because it's what we've been learning in school. And then we have this opportunity to learn even more communication skills. So we take our basic knowledge of a physical, and then with that, we're learning more about like new ways to communicate or new methods to do an eye exam or how to communicate. And a lot of it is really extremely important. I would say communication, we keep saying that, communication, but I think it's the most important.
If you were not involved in this program, Health Meet, would you actually interact with people with IDD in the course of your training?
I think it would be a lot less likely. In our 3rd and 4th years of our course, we spend a lot of time in the hospitals and we're seeing a lot of patients. And so I guess it would really just depend on who walked in through those doors. But regardless of whether we interact with patients with IDD in our med school careers, you know, it's inevitable that we will when we do become physicians, which is why we're so excited to have the opportunity to be at the ARC and get that early exposure and become comfortable with working with this population.
There are so many vulnerable populations to be covered in a medical school curriculum that it's difficult to get exposure with every single one of them. But that is the beauty of having clinics that go out into the real world rather than just a curriculum that's paper-based. So I think having the opportunity through Drexel and through the ARC to actually get out into the world and actually have that first encounter and overcome those like awkward first encounters with people that sometimes it just awkward just on our part, because every person I've encountered at the ARC has just been joyful and excited and not awkward at all. It's mostly on my part, but I think the application and the actual real life experience is extremely valuable.
What Devin had brought up was just that visiting the ARC and getting that exposure is what helped alleviate some of their concerns as students. And now they've actually been working with us for a year, and they're incredible. Every time they walk in the door, they're best friends with people. You know, we say hi to participants that come up to us every Friday. But so as Devin mentioned, it may be more on our side to self-reflect on how I treat people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And I wanted to mention that that is not an issue within, that is not a healthcare issue. I look at it as that's the public's issue, right? So going back to, I don't want to do the right do the wrong thing, or oftentimes people actually talk to people with special needs as if they're children, will literally put on a baby voice for somebody that's 50 years old, and it's just not necessarily appropriate. There's a term that we use, it's called presuming competence. So to treat somebody the way that you would treat anybody else and presume their competence in your interaction and conversation. And if you notice that somebody may have different cognitive functioning, then you can alter how you're interacting with that individual on an appropriate level. But not to just assume, okay, somebody has special needs, so I'm going to talk to them like a child, even though they're 20 years older than myself. So again, it's not necessarily an issue within healthcare. It's an issue amongst the entire public. And so I like to think of it as if the entire public has some of these concerns, it permeates everybody's field, no matter what area you work in. And healthcare is no different.
You mentioned presuming competence just then. And when you deal with a healthcare professional, they expect you to speak up and be your own advocate. And that's another issue here, isn't it? Communication barriers that might exist?
Yeah. And actually, we're trying to switch from communication barriers to just communication differences. So just because somebody communicates differently doesn't necessarily mean it should be an obstacle to overcome. It's just how they communicate and how people can meet in the middle there. Communication is one of the biggest challenges for healthcare providers, specifically around the terminology and vocabulary that is used in healthcare settings. So I would say I have no idea what a doctor can say will spew out their jargon at me at any given moment, and that's no different for people with disabilities. So if you're relying on communication from an individual who does have communication differences, there's going to be a challenge there that's going to lead to a deficiency in care there. Specifically, actually self-reporting pain, things like that, is an issue amongst the population with IDD. For whatever reason, they can get looked over as somebody exaggerating. It can get looked over as they do that all the time. It can also be the opposite in that it may seem more urgent than it is. And it's really just a case-by-case basis like anybody else, where to understand what the person is visiting a physician for or going to the ER for has to be figured out. I can actually give you a story. My brother's nonverbal, and he uses vocalizations in a way, so his is his yes and his is his no, and you can pick up on that if you were to communicate with him for more than 5 minutes. But initially, you're going to have a difficult time if you haven't met him before. So it really is just working with the individual when you first meet, and there are different strategies that we teach the students that visit each Friday. You know, when you do have somebody that speaks differently or uses vocalizations, and one of their strategies is finding their yes and their no. If you can get somebody's yes and their no down, whether it's a vocalization or an eye gaze or body language,
looking for visual cues.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Everybody is going to communicate in those different ways. So if you can pick up somebody's yes and no, you should be able to. You can have an easier time getting through a health assessment or a visit to the doctor's office.
Now, you said if you spend more than 5 minutes with your brother, you're going to be able to pick up However, in an emergency room, or heck, in any kind of a clinic situation, you're lucky if you spend 5 minutes with the physician at any given time. So you touched on the emergency room. When someone is not getting regular care, and this is the same for all populations, the emergency room is the fallback. And so is there special training for emergency personnel, because they are going to see someone in that quick, and they're going to see people who are coming in for routine health care, unfortunately?
I believe that communication, like what Shane was saying, like anything, requires practice. And I think previous exposure to all these populations will really help you with communication. We're taught we have to use like regular jargon, not using medical terms when you talk to anybody, just because it makes, you don't know what anybody's literacy level is or how they communicate. And so like you have to take that moment before you communicate with anyone, not specifically with the IDD population, but with anyone, and really gauge where they're coming from. Because the literacy levels and education levels are so vastly different in the United States. And that's something that doctors have to take into consideration before they meet with a patient. So I think that the ARC is just another opportunity to learn those communication skills. And they are different than how you would with someone who doesn't have IDD, but they are just as valuable. And they don't take long to learn either. Like just like Shane was talking about, like the second time I went to clinic, you're getting used to that, finding a person's yes or no, and just adapting like the way you would take a physical or do regular eye exams and just things like that. It's just small adaptations and you can find out the same information. And so I think it's just previous exposure and practice that really makes you become a better physician in regards to communication.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think the communication aspect is kind of the most valuable part of what we learn by being at the ARC so often. As Devin and Shane were talking about, communicating, I think, with anyone, with even just normal patients who don't have IDD, is like a skill that you gain over time because, of course, when we're talking to our colleagues and things like that, we're used to using jargon. So we even have to adapt for talking to patients who don't have IDD. And then with the IDD population, I think it's just one extra step where you might have to be a little bit more creative in the communication strategies that you use. But again, it's really not too difficult to pick up on. It's just a matter of exposure and practice. And I think that, you know, with just in the general population, there's that hesitation about whether you will be able to communicate with someone who has like special needs or IDD. But once you kind of have that exposure and that practice, you realize it's really not too difficult.
How do patients come into the clinics there?
So we actually recruit from our adult day program. So those individuals are volunteering to meet with the med students just as much as the med students are volunteering to meet with them. I think it's always a great fun dynamic. And they use the program as a way to practice going to the doctor to learn about their health. So they bring up their questions with the students that visit. And it's not too often that we find anything because everybody does visit our program every day. So, but some of the things that we may find are an ingrown toenail, or if they happen to maybe have an abrasion in their ear from trying to clean their ears, things like that. So very minor issues, but we do report back to home and give a recommendation of, hey, make sure you know make that dentist appointment if it's been a few years, or are you sure that you may have the right prescription of glasses? Like ask somebody at home if you think you want to go check out your vision again to make sure you have the correct prescription.
As Shane was saying, we do have an outreach section of our board for at least on the Drexel side for our outreach. And so one of our team members, Gordon, he takes once we do the screening and we write down if we've found anything simple, like so like a little cut or like maybe something like one time I know this woman, her shoes were really tight and her feet were really hurting. We saw her at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So she was like complaining about that. And so it's just small things sometimes, but it's definitely helpful and it improves their quality if her shoes were not as tight. So we write those notes down. And then Gordon comes about like once a month and he calls, whether it be a caretaker or a parent. And he says, hi, we had this screening. They did great. We just noticed this. So maybe shoes not so tight, tie a little tight. Or like next time you go to the doctor, they were complaining of like their ear kind of hurt. Maybe see if that's something. Or they said they wanted to maybe check up with your dentist. They were complaining of like some tooth pain or something like that. But there is an element of like what we screen doesn't just get lost. You know, there's a communication on all levels. So we're learning about communication, not only with our participants, but also with furthering that providing of care.
We write everything down on a sheet that's actually all pictures that match up with each section of the health assessment. So for your vision section, we actually have, you know, people's eyes and a literal image of an eyeball, I believe is what it is. For height and weight, we have a scale and a ruler, things like that, with a stick figure standing on it. So we have these images because if people have low literacy levels, we're not totally sure. So essentially, the sheet itself is a tool that our students use to communicate that back to home and to with a participant who may not be able to read or write. So using that imagery, and that goes back to what Devin was mentioning, that students visit and get to learn different techniques and strategies to work with this population, which you may not receive in school. They kind of tell you, yeah, we do it this way, and that's kind of how it goes. And no one may come around to explain you know, to be flexible, to be accommodating, and to get creative, because you may not be able to get through a physical health assessment with somebody with IDD if you don't have that level of creativity. So there's not necessarily check off the box and sign the line. We do a lot more interesting strategies when working with the groups of people we see.
Yeah, I've definitely learned a lot through the clinic, and something like very practical things that I know that I could use later in the future. Like for our eye exam, like everyone knows the classic, like cover up your eye and you read the letters, but like letters, even on any ranging of literacy, some people can't read letters. So we actually have a chart with pictures on it, like ones like an apple and a house and a circle and a square and a heart. And so we have that. And even for people who are nonverbal, we have a little chart that has all the pictures on it so they can point. And so just something simple as that, which it does come across super simple, but I don't know if I would have thought of it if I hadn't been taught at the ARC to do that. Or just even simple things like, you know, when you're supposed to inhale and exhale, when you do lung sounds and someone, the doctor's listening to your heart, it just putting it in a context of like blowing out a birthday candle. And so something that like makes it a little, the communication easier, and it comes across more, and it just makes the screening so much smoother. And
yeah, it's definitely those like little skills that you pick up that I think at the end of the day make a big difference.
Shane, how do we get involved? How does the public interact or get involved with the programming?
Well, firstly, I can call upon anybody that's a member of this community. If you yourself have IDD or any disability, parents, guardians, caregivers, family members, to have those conversations with your healthcare providers. A lot of times there can be some very great experiences and some very not so great experiences. And when you do have that, you know, to keep your frustration in check, but to also discuss, you know, this one didn't go as smooth with my son here because his anxiety is kind of going through the roof while we're in the waiting room, and it took a while to get in here. And then by the time we did get seen, he's now not cooperating to the point where we can get through an effective exam. So just to have that, hey, whoever your doctor is, can you think of any strategies that we can use for next time? Can we double book an appointment if you need more than 15 minutes? You know, you can ask for these things. It's just a matter of being an advocate for that person in your life, or being that self-advocate for yourself when you are interacting with a lot of these healthcare systems and providers.
Does the ARC offer guidance for this? Does your programming help with tips like this?
So as a health advocate, yeah, you can reach out to us and I'll give you some advice and tips along the way, similar to some of those tricks I just mentioned, that you are allowed to ask to be double booked. It may be some time till you get it, but if you don't ask, you're definitely not going to receive it. So again, kind of first and foremost is to see what self-advocacy skills you can have and what advocacy skills you can develop for that person in your life. And we kind of guide you in that aspect of developing those advocacy skills for yourself and your family.
Do you work with peers? Can physicians and healthcare providers work with you to find out better treatment methods or better communication skills?
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, healthcare providers will also report that they may not be as confident or they may not be as prepared. And it's for a variety of different reasons. Providers will report that they may not have had any training or experience working with population with IDD in the past. So, yeah, we do offer trainings. We actually have a program called Inclusion Pass, which was designed for retail environments and hospitality environments, any public spaces you can think of, from the movie theaters to restaurants, which essentially is training your staff how to interact and promote a more inclusive environment for people with IDD. And we're now taking that program and adapting it to healthcare settings as well, because it's a lot of the same issues that we address. It's just kind of changing the context and the environment that we address it in.
We are totally out of time. So as we wrap this up, Shane, I'm going to assume that you are looking for, one, as a nonprofit, you are looking for donations for the programming. But also, if I am a healthcare provider or I have students and interns, et cetera, that would like to get involved, we can reach out to you.
Absolutely. You can find us at thearcphiladelphia.org. You mentioned we are a nonprofit, so we're always looking for those donations and partnerships that want to come aboard to enhance these experiences for the people we serve. And if you happen to work in a university setting, or if you work in a healthcare setting and you'd like to partner with us to provide that training for either your staff or to get students more involved, we're looking to grow this beyond our partnership with Drexel to the entire greater Philadelphia area. We're lucky to be in such a hub of medical schools, so it would be incredible to get involved with anybody that wants to get involved with us. Yes.
Go to ARC Philadelphia. arcphiladelphia.org, A-R-C, arcphiladelphia.org. You'll find out information about everything that we talked about today. And here's where I throw you all out and say thank you to the Health Meet Coordinator and Health Advocate Shane Janik and our medical students today from Drexel College of Medicine, Ashima Katakwar and Devin Barnaby. Thank you all for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Philadelphia Focus.